two cases scheduled for argument at 1:30. The first is Kabogal. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's correct.
Okay. Versus the Department of Natural Resources. And we have allowed 20 minutes for each side for oral argument. So we'll hear argument first in that case. And then after that, we'll hear argument in Worldmark v. Larimer County Board of Commissioners. I see counsel are set up for the Kabogal case. Are counsel here for the Worldmark case?
Yes, sir.
Okay, very well. We'll hear argument second in that case. I'll just briefly review our procedures to make sure you're familiar with them. As I said, we have 20 minutes for each side in the opening case and 15 minutes for each side in the Worldmark case. We have a digital timer that tells you how much time has elapsed. So if you're representing the appellant, you can determine for yourself when you wish to stop and reserve time for your rebuttal argument. We still have a color-coded timer so that it's green when you start and amber when you have 5 minutes left and red when your time is up. All of the judges have read the briefs and at least one of us has had an opportunity to review the record. So because of that, you may wish to focus on the legal arguments rather than the facts. But of course, how you present the argument is up to you. You should also be aware that there's a toggle switch on the podium that you may use to raise or lower it to suit your convenience. And I also want to mention that the arguments are recorded and posted on the internet. And so if you have any private information, you may wish to be careful as to how you refer to that during the course of your argument. And finally, I would ask everybody here to make sure that if you have a cell phone with you, that it's turned off so that it doesn't ring inadvertently during the course of our arguments and interrupt us. So with that having been said, we're ready to start in the argument in Kabogal versus Department of Natural Resources.
Your Honor, this is Robert Chapin. I'd like to introduce lead counsel in this case, Lyman Bedford of Hanson Bridges of San Francisco, California. He was admitted in this case pro bono check, and he will be presenting argument for plaintiffs.
Good. Very welcome, and we're pleased to have you here from California.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for the opportunity to present oral argument on behalf of the Kabogals and the Knievels. The Kabogals and Knievels are farm families that live in Morgan County who have decreed irrigation wells that they legally utilize to grow their crops for many years.
Excuse me if I could interrupt you. Could you state your name again for the record,
please? Sure. Lyman D. Bedford.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. In June of 2006, they received cease and desist orders from the state prohibiting them from pumping any irrigation water for an indefinite period of time. Despite the fact that the dates of beneficial use of all of their wells had a date of beneficial use that preceded the 1969 statutory regulatory scheme, they complied with the cease and desist orders and have not pumped any irrigation water since. This has resulted in their inability to grow crops on their lands, and their investment in their irrigated farmlands has been rendered worthless. They explored several augmentation options and chose the Central WAS, which is the Water Augmentation Subdistrict Group, as the most appropriate. They went to water court as part of the WAS group, but were forced to withdraw from that litigation and were not successful in obtaining any relief by way of an augmentation plan or a substitute water supply plan. Not a drop of their irrigation water has been restored.
Counselor, let me ask you this. Why isn't this squarely in the water court, given that the cease and desist order came as part of a water augmentation plan?
Well, I think the answer is this. They have elected, and in fact, I believe it's our only avenue to pursue a takings claim. for the takings of their property rights by reason of the action of the state. I might refer to it as the been there, done that situation. All of their predecessors in interest have been in the water court and have obtained decrees for these water rights for each and every one of these irrigation wells, and I think they total around 15. When they received their cease and desist orders, they went back into the water court with the WAS group and attempted to reach some sort of a situation where they could utilize at least some of their water. They met a dead end there.
I heard you say that you were from California, so you, like us, may not be all that familiar with the water court itself, because typically if it's a water court matter, it goes to the water court and not to this court.
I understand it, but this is our point. This is a takings case. This is not a water court case.
And that was going to be my next question was, if you're aware of what remedy the plaintiffs, not what remedy, but where, what forum or venue the claimants would have a takings claim.
Only in the district court. I think we explained that very clearly in our brief. You know, these are really constitutional issues, and you're right, I'm from California, I'm not from Colorado, but I think that everyone would agree that we are all bound by what the United States Supreme Court says. And I'm going to get to that argument in a moment, if I may.
Sure.
Thank you. When the Knievels and Kobobels purchased their farms, their investment-backed expectations were that they would be able to irrigate their farmlands and grow irrigated crops on those farmlands indefinitely. When they hit a dead end in water court, their only option was to file a case in Oregon County District Court for the taking or inverse condemnation of their property and receive reasonable compensation for the loss of their property.
Mr. Bedford, why couldn't they have appealed the decision from the water court to the Colorado Supreme Court?
Well, in essence, that's possible, although in reality it's not. Let me give you an example. Like I said, they dropped out of the WAS litigation. The people who the remaining WAS members who pursued that litigation have not gotten one single drop of water since this all started in 2006.
What is the status of that litigation?
I don't know. We're not part of it anymore. I know that the water court decreed that there was, under certain circumstances, they could perhaps get some water. But in fact, I was just informed with my clients today, and I saw the thing that the WAS members get zero water this year. Zero.
But let me come back to my question, though. I'm not sure I've heard you answer why your clients could not have appealed or stayed in that WAS litigation and then appealed any adverse ruling to the Colorado Supreme Court.
They were expelled from the WAS group because they refused to give up their water rights as a condition of continuing.
But isn't that a decision that would have been appealable?
It wasn't part of that litigation. That litigation was to see if there could be established either an augmentation or a substitute water supply plan for the members of the WAS group. My people were expelled from that group before the case even went to trial.
And who expelled them?
WAS.
And could you explain to me who governs WAS?
Well, they're their own organization. My understanding is they have taxing authority, they have a board of directors or a board of governors, and what they did was they came to all the members saying, if you are to go forward as part of this lawsuit, you have to give up roughly three quarters of your wells. In other words, give up the rights to three quarters of your wells. Our people refused to do that, and they were expelled, and they were not part of the final decree that was rendered by the court.
But I'm still having trouble understanding, and maybe it's because of my lack of familiarity with the proceedings in water court, but why couldn't the Kabobels and the Knievels have just pursued a claim on their own?
Because they had no means, and this is something that we can certainly prove in court on the merits if we ever get the chance, because they had no means of obtaining any sort of augmentation plan or substitute water supply plan outside of a group such as WAS. And it's just, I mean, we can put, this is, you know, at the pleading and motion to dismiss phase, and we certainly, as an offer of proof, can show that any further attempts to obtain an augmentation plan or a substitute water supply plan would be futile. And that's an exception to bringing a takings action.
Let me ask you this. Do you agree that water use is a matter that is heard in water court?
Yes, that's right. Water use is a matter for water court, but also the use of water is recognized by Colorado law. At least the vested use of vested water rights is a property right. So you really have two concepts. Number one, if my clients wanted to spend the money and the effort to litigate and try to restore the use of their water, I would agree with you 100%. They would belong in water court, but that's not what they're after. What they're after is compensation for the taking of their property rights by this cease and desist order.
But isn't this a right to use as opposed to a right to ownership?
It doesn't make any difference because the right to use is recognized as a property right.
But aren't
that's the old, I'm sorry, the Comstock case that I cited in our briefs?
Right.
It's treated as a property right.
But even if it is a property right, if it is a right to use, isn't that property right nonetheless a matter for water court?
No, because as I've explained, at least hopefully in our briefs, the water court has very limited, distinct jurisdiction, and it does not have jurisdiction over a takings claim. It does not have jurisdiction over constitutional claims. The water court cannot impanel a jury to determine what my client's damages are, assuming there's been a taking, all of which are guaranteed by the laws of the state of Colorado and by the Colorado Constitution.
Mr. Bedford, do your clients still have their water rights or their water priorities?
Yes, they have their water rights, but there's no way to utilize them.
Well, it seems to me that a necessary predicate for having a takings claim is some kind of showing that the cease and desist orders would have a permanent effect, and that would be the equivalent of a surrender of their priority and their water rights.
We certainly intend to and can prove that at the trial level. We just want our day in court is what we want. And we're not going to get our day in court in water court, because water court doesn't have the authority and jurisdiction to render the type of relief, i.e. just compensation for an inverse condemnation case, that the district court has. The sole jurisdiction in takings case is in district court. It's not in water court. Water court can't do that. Let me talk about the Lucas case, if I may. This case, the instant case, has many similarities to Lucas versus South Carolina Coastal Council, decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1992, 505 U.S. 1003. In the Lucas case, Mr. Lucas bought two seafront lots near Charleston, South Carolina. He was going to build a single-family dwelling on each. 2 years later, the South Carolina Coastal Council decided there could be no building on those lots in order to promote tourism and to protect endangered species. In that case, which is a real landmark case in the issue of property rights and taking, the court held that regulations that prohibit all economically beneficial use of land cannot be legislated or decreed without compensation. Also held, the Fifth Amendment is violated when a land use regulation denies the owner economically viable use of his land. As in Lucas, in the case of Kabobel and Knievel, we have a situation where you got land, which is more or less worthless. You can't use it. You can't grow crops on it. You've lost your livelihood. An economically viable farm in northeastern Colorado must have land, it must have water, and it must have a system that delivers water to the crops. If you take the water away, the economic viability ceases. And as cited in our briefs, the Colorado statutes make it clear that jurisdiction for a takings case lies with the district court. The effect of the dismissal of this case by the district court is really putting the Kabobels and the Knievels in a catch-22 situation. They have reached a dead end in water court. Water court cannot award them just compensation for the loss of their property. To file again in water court would be a futile, expensive, and useless exercise. The practical effect of affirming the decision of the district court is to deprive the Kabobels and the Knievels of any legal remedy for the loss of their farms and their livelihood. The water court does not adjudicate or protect constitutional rights. Only the district court has jurisdiction to determine the plaintiff's constitutional claims. And as I've already mentioned, decreed water rights for irrigation are property under the law of Colorado. The Kabobels and Knievels do not dispute that the state has the power to take their property for other public purposes, such as protection of endangered species. However, they are entitled to their day in court and have their claim for just compensation heard on the merits. To affirm the dismissal of their complaint by district court deprives them of any remedy for the loss of their property. Thank you.
Okay, you have about 5.5 minutes for a rebuttal.
I understand. Thank you. I don't know how to stop this, or I guess you do.
Yes, it has the bailiff to stop the time.
All right, thank you.
You don't have to worry about that.
May it please the court, my name is Pat Sayas, number 29672. I'm here on behalf of the defendants. I think we'd all agree that water courts have jurisdiction over water matters. And that's black letter law. And Colorado courts have held that the determination of the right to use of water is a water matter. Therefore, if the plaintiff's claim in this case turns on the right to use of water, then it's a water matter in the water court. Not the district court has jurisdiction.
Does the water court have jurisdiction over takings claims?
No, it doesn't have jurisdiction over takings claims. I would agree with counsel with that. But what we're talking about is use of water. And I'm going to give you four reasons why plaintiff's claim involves the use of water. First reason is because they tell you that it does. In paragraph 6 of their complaint, they allege that they have the right to use of water. In paragraphs 10 and 15 and 20 of their complaint, they allege that the cease and desist orders took that right of use. So what we're talking about is the right to use of water. The second reason plaintiff's claim involves right to use of water has to do with the nature of the injury that they're alleging. Now, in essence, what plaintiffs are claiming is that the cease and desist orders prohibited them from using the water as they did before. They're not claiming that someone else now owns that right of use. What they're claiming is that they can't use the water as they did before, and that involves right of use. Now, the third reason plaintiff's claim involves right of use has to go to the nature of the claim at issue. Now, if I could back up just for a second. In Colorado, the waters in the natural stream are a public resource. In the Colorado Constitution and the courts, it said you can't own it. What you can get, however, is the right to use that water. Now, that right to use is governed by something called the prior appropriation system. And that's, counsel cited the Comstock case. And in Comstock, the Supreme Court said that's the ancient doctrine of first in time, first in right. And that system goes back to when Colorado was a territory. Now, what's the right that you get under that system? The right that you get is to use a certain amount of water, subject to the amount of water that's available for appropriation and subject to the rights of senior appropriators. What you don't get is the right to use that certain amount of water, regardless of where you are in priority and regardless of how much water is in the stream.
Mr. Sayers, what is the basis for the cease and desist order that was entered here by the state engineer?
On its face, the cease, which is one of the reasons I believe that this is about use, on its face, what the cease and desist order told the plaintiffs was that because they were a member of the Central Wasp Group, they could not, there was a water court order prohibiting them from drawing water until they had a court-approved augmentation plan. And therefore, they couldn't draw that water. Now, plaintiffs have argued that they left Central Wasp, but that doesn't change the fact that you can't draw that water as well users until you have augmentation or a substitute water supply plan.
Well, why did the state engineers issue that cease and desist order saying that the Kobobos and the Knievels had to participate in the WAS?
Well, the way I read that order is what it was saying was that you had the court order, the water court order that was addressing those folks who were in the Central WAS. And what that court order said is you can't draw the water until you get a court-approved augmentation plan. And that was the impetus for the order.
But I'm still trying to figure out what was the reason that, what precipitated this? Was there a diminution in the water flow that caused this order to be issued in the first place?
Factually, in this case, that's not, I don't know factually. However, I can say this, though, that when you look at the City of Thornton case and the Bijou versus Simpson case, there's been, Colorado courts presume that drawing water through wells depletes the surface water. And there's been a recognition by both the General Assembly and by the courts that you have appropriated rivers, and the South Platte is one of those rivers. Therefore, by drawing water, wells pumping that water, there's a presumption, unless proven otherwise, that you're depleting the surface water, which is the reason for the augmentation plans and the substitute water supply plans, because those plans allow for junior appropriators to draw water out of priority, provided they have that plan so that they can substitute water back in to the natural stream so as not to injure senior appropriators.
Let me ask you one more question, if I might.
Yes.
It seems like an unstated supposition of the complaint is that the order, the cease and desist order, would have a permanent effect on the Kobobos and the Knievels so that they would never, ever be able to use any of their well water. Would you agree with that?
I can't, because I don't know. If they're able to obtain a plan, then they could draw the water at some time in the future. And they recognized that, in fact, in oral argument, where they said that if at some point they could obtain the right of use, then they would have a claim for a temporary taking. But what we're talking about, again, is the right to use of water. And that's controlled by the water court.
Well, then the correlative implicit presumption in your position is that at some point, under some circumstances, the Kobobos and Knievels could have access to some water.
They could have access to some water. I would agree with that. However, I would add this, that let's say that they can't obtain that plan. Let's say they can't get that augmentation plan. The fact is that if the water court says that you can't use the water, you can't use the water. And that's been established by the courts. That's a water court issue.
So you're not entitled to compensation from any court?
No, because what we're talking about is use. Let me use this by analogy. Let's say that what we have is one gulp of water left in that river. And it's a big river, so let's say it's a big gulp. And let's say that the senior appropriators, the two who maybe have their rights dating back to when Colorado was a territory, make a call on that water because they have the right to a certain amount of water. And let's say that the amount there would satisfy what their right is. And if junior appropriators wanted to stick a straw in there, you know, their straw to pull out that water, and if the water court said you can't do it because these folks have that right, under plaintiff's theory then, all these junior appropriators would have the right to sue the state for protecting the rights of use that belong to these senior appropriators.
Is there, and surely this can't be the first time that a cease and desist order has told would-be plaintiffs that they couldn't use their wells. Are you aware of any published authority addressing this issue, on the issue of taking, and whether they have a taking claim, and if so, where it would be?
What the only authority that I'm aware of is I did make a reference to the Chernobyl case, or the Charbonneau case, rather, excuse me, in my brief, just to alert the court that it was out there. And that was the similar, identical issue to what we're addressing
but
here.
But nothing published?
It was not published, and the plaintiffs contest whether it's presidential value.
It's not, right?
It's not published. That's the only case that I'm aware of that's gotten to the appellate court on this issue. It's come up with other district court issues, but this is the first time I'm aware of this gone.
So if I understand your position, then a party could never have a takings claim when their water use has been taken from them.
If their right to use of water was taken from them, and the water court determined that they had that right of use, and that was indeed taken, then I would agree with you, then they would have a taking claim. The rub is that you've got to have the district court, or excuse me, the water court, make that determination about right of use. I think the Tonko case is illustrative of that point, because in Tonko, you had the plaintiffs file condemnation action in district court. And that case was a little different because it was dealing with ditch easements. But what the district court said was that before you can have a taking claim, what you have to have is the water court adjudicated right to that water. If you get that right, then come back and you may have that taking claim.
And now, where would you have that taking claim?
Well, you would have that taking claim in district court, provided that you had a water court determination as to right of use.
But I'm confused. I thought from the briefs that the water court's jurisdiction was to determine priority among water users rather than to determine that a particular party did not have an ownership claim to water.
No, it can't. You're right. It can't. It doesn't. The water court can't determine ownership. But what we're talking about here is the right of use. The limitation of water deals with right of use, and that falls in the bailiwick of the water court.
Right. I understand that. That's what you've been saying consistently. But to follow up on Judge Lichtenstein's question, if there were to be a determination that the Knievels and the Kobobels no longer had an ownership of or water right, would that have to be done in the district court in some kind of proceeding there?
If I understand correctly, what you're asking me was, if the water court determined that they had the right of use, and that there in that right of use through the cease and desist orders had denied them that right, and they had that right, they would have then the right for a taking claim. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is people who, within the prior appropriation system, have a right of use. And here, the right that plaintiffs have the same right that they always have, that right to use a certain amount of water, subject to what is available and to where they are in the priority. Plaintiffs are in the position that they're in because of where they are in priority and the amount of water that's available. So that's, again, what we're talking about is right of use. And if I could talk just very briefly about the 1969 Act, the Water Right Determination Administration Act, if I understand plaintiffs correctly, what they're saying is that because their appropriation rights predate the Act, that the Act does not apply to them. And I'm going to give you two reasons why it does apply to them, the same way it applies to all appropriators. The first reason being has to do with the history of the Act. The Act came about because in Fellauer, Colorado Supreme Court determined that the water judge did have the authority to prevent junior appropriators from interfering with the rights of senior appropriators. But what the court in Fellauer did was ask the legislature to come up with legislation for the administration of all the waters in the state and all the appropriators in the state. And the General Assembly responded with the 1969 Act. Therefore, just historically, the Act was to apply to everyone on all the waters in the stream. And when you look at the language of the Act, specifically 3792-102, what the General Assembly did there was say that it succinctly that it applies to surface water appropriators and groundwater appropriators, so that it applies to the uses of all the water in the state. So they didn't draw a distinction between some rivers and other rivers. It applies to all the water in the state. And what the Act also did was provide that junior all appropriators, including well owners, who had a right of appropriation that existed before the Act, that their rights were going to be, or their rights of use would be protected pursuant to the provisions of the Act. Therefore, the Act applied to everyone. There's nothing in the 1969 Act that draws a distinction between appropriators who have rights before 1969 or those who come after 1969. It applies to everyone. And if I could just talk about the taking issue for a moment, I think that the taking issue is interrelated with the jurisdictional issue in that what we're talking about here is the right of use, and that's the Tonkel case that I alluded to before. If you get a determination that that right of use has been denied you somehow, then arguably under Tonkel you would have a takings claim. But again, that's not what we're talking about here, because plaintiffs have the same right that they have always had. It has not been taken from them. Counsel alluded to the Lucas case, and in his brief he also addressed the Tulare case, I believe, in Penn Central. The rights, again, that we have, I don't want to wear you down, but it's a different right. It's a right of use. The right at issue here is different from those cases. For instance, in Tulare, what we were talking about in Tulare was a government interference with a contractual right, and that's not what we have here. That's why those cases are distinguishable. In short, the district court, when you view it, the 1969 Act and what it provides, in the history of the prior appropriation system, and the fact that courts have time and time again established that rights of use belong with the water court, the district court got it right. Well, I want to thank you for your time.
Yes,
for your attention. Sure.
The trial court found a lack of subject matter jurisdiction. That being the case, should it have even ruled on the takings and the federal constitutional issues and the rightness issue in this case?
Technically, I would agree with you, no. However, again, as I said, I think that those rights are interrelated. And interrelated for the reason that in order to have a takings claim, you got to have a right that's taken. And the right we're talking about here is right of use. And right of use falls at the bailiwick of the water court, not the district court.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sayers.
Honorable Justices, if I may.
The counsel for the state refers to the actions taken by the state as for the protection of senior appropriators. However, that is simply a bald assertion. Because what we have here is not a situation where the state engineer says you can't pump for a month, or you can only pump 30% of the amount of your decree, because we have calls from senior appropriators. In fact, what we have here is a blanket prohibition against use of any water at any time under any circumstance. It bears no relationship whatsoever as to whether or not a call has been put out by a senior appropriator.
Let me ask you this. You're referring to it as a blanket prohibition of use. Is that the same thing as taking a right, or is it just a prohibition of use?
Well, that is taking a right, in my view, because it's a regulatory scheme that is deprived people of their property rights. As a matter of fact, if I can, I'm sorry. And counsel referred to the Tahco case. Well, the basic difference between the Tahco case is that in Tahco, the district court says, well, wait a minute, you know, you can't pursue a takings claim, you know, until you first go into water court and have an adjudicated decree to use your wells or use your water. And in fact, this is a totally different situation. There is a decree from the water court with respect to each and every one of these wells. And opposing counsel is incorrect when he says we are making the claim that we are not subject to the 1969 Act. That is not true. The problem is that the administration of the 1969 Act and the other legislation that followed in 2002 has resulted in the deprivation of property rights of our clients. Our clients aren't claiming that they're not subject to the 1969 Act. As a matter of fact, they obeyed and have obeyed the entire time the cease and desist order, and they have not pumped water. Certainly, the state has the right to regulate. And the if I can just give you this cite from Lucas, which is at page 1014, they talk about governmental regulation, and they say if instead the uses of private property were subject to unbridled, uncompensated qualification under the police power, the natural tendency of human nature would be to extend the qualification more and more until the last private property disappeared. These considerations gave birth to the oft-cited maxim that, quote, while property may be regulated to a certain extent, if the regulation goes too far, it will be recognized as a taking.
Mr. Bedford, you said before when you were referring to Lucas that the Supreme Court there said that a landowner had to be deprived of all beneficial use of his or her property.
Right.
Discussion that we've talked about is the Kobobos and Knievels being deprived of the opportunity to use their land for irrigated farms. Do they also have to show that they can't use it for any other purpose?
Yes, and they're prepared.
Non-agricultural purpose?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, and they're prepared to do that. We're prepared to do that through expert testimony.
Okay. But was that alleged in the complaint?
Well, what was alleged in the complaint is it's rendered their land worthless. I think that's adequate for pleading purposes.
Okay.
Anyway, Your Honors, to sum up, we request that you reverse the dismissal of this action by the district court, remand it back to the district court for determination of the merits of the Kobobos and Knievels takings claims. It doesn't belong in front. I've got a few seconds, so let me just say this. If you affirm the district court and we refile in water court, we'll get nothing. We'll gain nothing because the water court does not have jurisdiction to adjudicate the takings claim. And the only avenue that my clients have is through district court pursuing a takings claim and seeking just compensation for the loss of their property. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bedford. Thank you, Mr. Chapin, as well. Thank you, Mr. Sayes. We appreciate your arguments. Mr. Bedford, we again appreciate your coming here from San Francisco to present the argument to us this afternoon. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. As